You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty.
I, Gerald R. Ford, do grant.
The other passengers very reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused.
The young man needs to be mind to work. There's no limit to what he can do.
This is truly the next chapter in General Motors' recovery and turnaround.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
As banking and the transferring of funds continues to evolve from paper to electronic here in the 21st century, let's spend some time thinking back to Michiganders in the 19th century. For them, procuring cash was way more complicated than rolling up to a nearby ATM and peeling off a stack of 20s. Without a national bank issuing currency, states like Michigan chartered their own banks with no federal oversight. And as one might imagine, without regulation, banking was quite untamed, so to speak. So soon the term wildcat banking became part of America's lexicon. With us now from the Michigan History Center is our partner in these looks in history, Mark Harvey. So Mark, in a nutshell, what was wildcat banking?
The name came from, supposedly, a bank issuing currency with the image of a wildcat on it. We don't have that in our collection as far as I've seen, so it's a great story.
Yeah.
Not 100% certain if it's true, but the term itself came from this new statehood in Michigan, lots of land speculation, and Michigan became the first state in the country to allow for free banking. So they passed the General Banking Act in 1837. It allowed banks to issue notes, not specie, like we, you know, not official federal currency, but okay, banknotes that could be used as currency, and they were. And the term wildcat, really, not all banks were bad banks or insolvent banks, but this was sort of like the sins of the few covered everybody up in the mess, and it really languished for the rest of the century in Michigan.
What did the banks have to back up their money?
Well, so there's lots of stories about that. One of my favorite stories is that there was, when they were inspected by the commissioners, they would show their resources that backed the bank, and it was a box of money, but really it was on the top was the currency, and underneath it were like nuts and bolts and other stuff. Great story. But what happened is there were some that had some resources to back their currency and some that just had none. I mean, the worst examples, they were just issuing notes with nothing to back them up.
Basically worthless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these were circulated and traded as currency, usually not at the same value as regular specie. So anywhere from 15 to 25% less value. They were introduced into Western New York and into Northern Ohio. So it wasn't just Michigan, but the real problem came when these notes, when they were redeemed, were sent back to the issuing bank.
Uh-oh.
And that's where the rubber met the road, right?
The rubber met the road.
So they either paid up or they closed up.
Ultimately, how long did this sputter along until it finally collapsed?
Well, again, it has this huge story about it. It really only lasted for a couple of years. So 1837, General Banking Act came about. The very first free banks weren't even wildcat banks. They were more normally operating banks.
And when we say free banks, what does that mean?
Free banks mean that they can generate their own, like you said, unregulated by federal government.
All
so
right.
They can generate their own notes.
So as we all know, Alexander Hamilton set up the nation's money system. This was kind of off on its own sphere.
Right. And, you know, we're it's first year statehood.
Yeah.
There is rampant land speculation. So this might be a familiar story. We had rules, guidelines that said things like you could get a mortgage for the appraised value of the property instead of the market value. Ring any bells?
Mm.
So these weren't great financial decisions.
Boy, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. And so a couple years, 1839, the Democrats did away with the General Banking Act, and they really became anti-bank. They didn't like banks. And this became a platform for the Republicans in 1854, and it really lasted through the end of the century. It was a political platform to say banks were the cause of lots of our problems.
Again, echo, echo, echo.
Yeah.
Here
yeah,
we
right?
are. So these banks, any bank could print its own currency and then, what, take it into town and be able to use it if I needed to buy supplies for my farm?
It was similar to what you're saying. They could establish themselves as incorporate as a bank, issue notes as currency, depending on the community. I mean, again, this is not, we're not a huge state at this point. We're burgeoning. We're baby state. And so lots of times these probably circulated within the community or near the borders of that community. So they didn't have wide spread. And the same for those notes that went into Western New York and Northern Ohio. The reason those spread in there is because those states didn't have denominations less than $5. So these banks filled the void, like, oh, well, you know, we got less than that. It's not worth anything, but...
Don't dig into that cash box too deeply.
Right.
Any other particularly poor practices that these wildcat banks leveled on consumers that we need to look at?
The one that really stuck out to me was the mortgage for appraised value and not for market value, because that, you know, that's echoes of 2008.
So it is a part of the past, and that's a good thing, but it certainly does seem like Michigan was kind of a hotbed of these wildcat banks.
They were a leader once again. Maybe we don't want to be a leader so much in this area, but we were.
Mark Harvey, our partner at the Michigan History Center. Thanks so much for taking us into the Banking Wayback Machine.
Thank you.